This episode is brought to you by Levo. Simple, potent, at-home herbal infusions at the push of a button. Learn more at levooil.com and feed your enthusiasm. That's levooil.com.
Hello and welcome to Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers. I'm your co-host, your lone co-host this week, Ethan Frisch. And my guest is someone I've been working with for the last few months pretty closely, but has been a friend of mine for a few years. And we used to run into each other on the kind of food startup scene in New York. So I'm really happy to have her on the podcast and do a little bit more of a deep dive into her background and her business. Anjali Bhargava is the founder of Bija Bar. Anjali, thanks for joining me.
I'm so happy to be doing this.
So let's just kick it off with who are you and what do you do?
Well, who am I? That's a profound question.
we get deep very quickly here on Why Food.
So what do I do? My company is Bija Bar, before this week, my product was Resilience Turmeric Elixir, which is a minimally processed turmeric drink mix with three kinds of turmeric, ginger, lemon, maple, and black pepper. I also sell some turmeric. And then, of course, as of this week, the new product is Anjali's Chai Masala with burlap and barrel.
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. I guess, why don't we start there? This is the first product, the first new product, I should say, that you'd launched in a while. Maybe give us some background on your previous sort of product lineup and how this one is different.
Yeah, so I actually started the business with a completely different product. It was a snack. It was a super seed snack. And the idea was that it was a sort of nutrient-dense, bite-sized snack that, like, kept you going, kept your blood sugar regulated. So whether, for me, in my case, I was a photographer, so when I was doing a shoot, I didn't want to, like, be slowed down. But it has all kinds of applications for athletes and just people running around. And so it was also minimally processed, really good quality organic ingredients. And so I had this pivot in my life from photography to being a food entrepreneur. And the stress of that learning curve the first year is what really drove me to create Resilience Turmeric Elixir. And, was really something I used to get out of a really bad sort of health situation with horrible migraines on a regular basis and all kinds of other stuff. And I was sent to a bunch of specialists. No one could figure it out. And I basically just got fed up with all of them and said, you know what? I have so much knowledge about, like, the body system, like, from just years of having done panchakarmas in India and Ayurveda ashrams and living there for 40 days. And from having a mom who is an amazing cook and also like an encyclopedia of herbs and all kinds of different concoctions. So, you know, I just had all this wealth of home remedies in my head, and I knew that turmeric would help me. So I really, like, I was trying to get fresh root all the time. I was getting organic. And it was like, when you're not feeling well, the last thing you want to be doing is finding that little store in Park Slope that has some fresh organic turmeric and then it going bad in your fridge by the time you finish it. So I tried using powders and they just don't taste the same, and I wasn't getting the same benefit from it. So I decided to use my dehydrator and actually create my own powder, and it really helped me. And I haven't had migraine headaches the same way. I haven't had any real headache issues actually since then. It took a little while, but drinking it every day and really committing to it really, like, changed my health. And I kind of knew at that moment that this was something I had to find a way to make. And then that led me on a quest for a farmer, because I really, really wanted to use white turmeric in the blend. And so that was really what pushed me to finding my farmer, because he grows, I think, 6 varieties of turmeric. And scaling that product, in the very beginning, I was getting fresh root from him, blanching it to like kill any microbes, slicing it, dehydrating it, grinding it. It was like, I mean, I think my cost per pound at that point was like $400 for my turmeric. But I really believed in it. And so scaling that product took years. And so I haven't really been able to do much in terms of innovation. But I finally started overseeing it still, but started working with a co-packer last year. And that sort of left me feeling like, okay, my first baby is out of diapers and maybe I can actually like start to explore all these other ideas in my head. And it felt like, because chai has always been such a personal love affair for me, that like, you know, it was just something I felt like I needed to get out into the world. And having experienced what sourcing is like, I knew that like sourcing all of the ingredients I wanted to use was going to be really hard to do directly. And so of course my first thought was like, I got to work with Burlap and Barrel on this. And so
I wasn't fishing, but
no,
but thank
you. I mean, but it really, I mean, it, like I've known you guys. I remember the first time we met, you had put little samples of fenugreek in the gift bags.
I think I had extra fenugreek, or no one was buying my fenugreek, and this was for an event, and I realized I could move some fenugreek by giving it away for free.
And I loved it. Like it's really good fenugreek.
It is.
So anyway, you know, it sat in my cupboard, and I don't know when the next time was that I saw you after that, but I remember I shared it with my mom. She made some kadu, like a pumpkin sabji with it. And it just had like, you know, an amazing flavor. And whenever I've gotten to try other spices along the way, I knew they were just super fresh. They were single origin, they're organic, like they checked off all of these boxes. And so it really was like such a clear solution. I know we started the conversation earlier with me just, you know, sourcing the ingredients from you. But then I think like along the way of this crazy year, we had the conversation about co-branding it. And I'm pretty excited about how it worked out.
Yeah, me too. I do want to talk a little bit about turmeric, because you know a lot about turmeric, probably more than I do, but I know a lot about turmeric, and a lot of people don't know a lot about turmeric. So let's spend a little time there. What have you come across in your research, and why did it inspire you to go through this incredibly laborious process of sourcing, blanching, drying, and grinding your own rather than using something that you could find?
So of course, you know, you guys weren't doing turmeric at that time.
That's
you guys
okay,
didn't
not.
Exist at that time.
but
I did, like, I tried everything I could get my hands on from every major like wholesale supplier. I searched through the internet and I tried things that said that they were raw, that said, and I didn't like the taste of anything. So, you know, I really created the recipe from reverse engineering. I just got, you know, like white turmeric and yellow turmeric from Patel Brothers and dehydrated that. That's how my original recipe came about. But I wasn't going to use conventional turmeric for my blend, nor was I intending to dehydrate it all myself. But I really wanted that flavor that you get from blending the yellow and the white. And I couldn't find white turmeric anywhere. I did find some Chinese medicine doctors, because it's used widely in Eastern medicine, who had white turmeric, but it tasted horrible. I don't know what sometimes those things go through, but I also think it had been stored in a warehouse with a lot of other herbs, and it had like absorbed all of those smells. So I started calling every farm that was somewhere on the internet that was growing turmeric, and all roads led back to my farmer who I now work with, because he actually supplies seed for other farmers. And so, you know, their whole thing is about growing the cleanest seed so that people have really great, a really great start to growing their own. And he's also scaled quite a bit over the years, and brought in the capability of drying the turmeric, which is a big thing for me. So what I found in the research was that part of the processing is a big difference in my turmeric. So most turmeric is boiled, and then that speeds up the processing, because one of the things with turmeric is, if you've ever like put it through a juicer or other things, it's got a lot of resins, like much like ginger or marijuana, like it's got this like stickiness to it, and so that stickiness makes the processing very difficult. And I realize that, of course, in my process, but my understanding is at least that it's the reason that in the last century it's become the norm to boil it. If you go back before that, like when my mom was growing up, she remembers very clearly that they would get the turmeric when it had been harvested. They would dry it on the roof or wherever, like in the sun, and then they would like pound that dried root with a mortar and pestle, and that's how they had turmeric. And I think that's why, you know, there's all this data about how historically India's had lower levels of Alzheimer's and all of these other illnesses. And interestingly, I've seen it even come up, and I'm not making any health claims, but I've seen it come up about why like the death rate is lower in India with coronavirus. So, you know, even after going through that boiling, the turmeric still has plenty of benefit, but I wanted it to not only taste good or better and smoother, I wanted it to be as potent as possible so that, you know, you're using as little as possible, because I think one of the big problems I see is like, I see all these recipes for turmeric lattes using a teaspoon of turmeric. And even if you have the most unadulterated pure turmeric, having a teaspoon every day, I mean, that's like having something like 10 grams of fresh root. That's super hard on your liver. And so if you're doing that on a regular basis, you can actually make yourself quite sick. Now, you know, you can probably speak much better to like what happens in terms of the adulteration and how you don't know which farm what's coming from if you're not getting it directly from a company like one of ours. And I remember you telling me a little bit about that. Yeah. I don't know if you want to jump in and share a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
about
turmeric,
how turmeric is generally traded.
Yeah, so I mean, that boiling step that you mentioned, I think is now there's sort of steaming or boiling, but the way that it's handled in India, where the vast majority of the world's turmeric is produced, is there will be a big pit dug in the field right around the harvest time, or when the turmeric is ready to harvest, and they'll build a fire in the pit and put a big pot of some kind on the fire, bring water to a boil, and basically as they're pulling turmeric out of the ground, it goes into the pot, it gets blanched, and then goes through all the drying process that you mentioned, either on somebody's roof or wherever. But because turmeric is so specifically associated with color rather than flavor or anything else, the Indian government's grading system for turmeric is purely based on color. So a darker orange versus a lighter orange. And just to make it even more confusing, those color grades all have place names, even though they're not necessarily from that place. So you could get what's called Alapi turmeric, which is a very high grade, according to the Indian government's grading system. Alapi is also a place, but it doesn't necessarily mean that turmeric came from that place. So that's confusing. Yeah. And then the other thing is, because color is how it's graded, color also determines the price. And so there are many, many, many instances of dyes being added to turmeric to make the color brighter. I talked to a researcher recently who was working on a public health research project in Bangladesh, and they were finding that poor women, especially in rural areas, had lead, were getting lead poisoning in
from their turmeric,
unprecedented amounts, and they couldn't figure out where the lead was coming from. It wasn't in any of the normal sources of lead in people's diet, and they were ultimately were able to trace it back exactly right to the turmeric. They were buying cheap turmeric that had been dyed with lead, and it was getting into their blood.
So the coloring that they use to, like, maybe, I don't know if it's actually to get a better price or to have it sold a different way, because so much of it is so overheated and processed, I think it loses the color sometimes.
Yeah.
And then they use that to compensate and make it the color it should be, but they're using a coloring that's not, you know, that has lead in it, which is insane.
Yeah, it's something called a Sudan dye usually, and right, it has lead in it. I guess the other word I think that people will have associated, will know or will associate with turmeric is curcumin. Do you want to talk about that?
So what's interesting about curcumin is that everyone, you know, there's a lot of people who are taking extracts because it is the most potent, the most beneficial element or part of the turmeric. However, there's actually many, many components of turmeric, and at least in Ayurveda, if you see, like, you know, when you have a whole food, there's, like, you know, the whole thing about, like, eggs, right? Like, if you just eat the egg whites, you don't get the full nutrition. So yes, maybe if you have a problem in your health, there's a reason why you want to eliminate some of the yolks, but that's a whole other thing. But generally speaking, you know, having the whole food, you know, nature made it a certain way, and curcumin is just one of the things. And to get the full spectrum of benefits that turmeric offers, you really want to have the whole thing. And it's also safer on your body. It's not as hard for your body to deal with. But one of the things that you generally see is that most turmeric on the market, I think, is around 3%. I've heard different numbers. I've heard 2.5 to 3.5%. My farmer, who's in the Big Island of Hawaii, he grows various varieties of turmeric, and I actually tested the recipe with all of them to see which ones I wanted to use. But one of the ones that he grows that I use, average testing is showing 8.5 to 9.5% curcumin, but it's super intense in flavor. So if you were to use that on its own, it would be overwhelming. So by adding something that's a little higher than average, which is around, say, like 5%, and then my white or mango turmeric, which is a little lower than average, but, you know, maybe in that 3% range, I get an average percentage of 7%, which means that you need to take a lot less to get and still very tangible benefits.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Does that answer?
Yeah, I think it does. Let's pause here. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Levo, the world's most intelligent at-home infuser. It's super easy to use to make infusions for cooking, candies, cosmetics, and herbal medicines. When the box showed up, I was excited to try it out as I've heard good things about the machine. It looks like a space-age coffee maker on the counter, and having it out makes me want to infuse everything. I've got plans for the hot peppers on my counter and the sage I picked from the garden before the first freeze last week, along with some other choice herbs and spices. I think everyone on my list is going to get infused oils this year. So far, I've used it for cannabis, basil, and orange peel infused oils and butter. The machine even has dry and activate functions for the highest potency and stability in your infusions, and you can connect through Wi-Fi to track your progress and record your recipes and share with the Levo community. Learn more at levooil.com. That's levooil.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food. My guest this week is Anjali Bhargava, founder of Bija Bar and Resilience Turmeric Elixir. All right, Anjali, I'm going to spring another turmeric question on you. How about black turmeric or blue turmeric?
Well, I've been trying to keep that close to the vest.
Oh, but, all right.
It's okay. No, it's okay. I think it's a super, super interesting, underutilized crazy superfood. Like, I tell people that what I feel when I have a piece of that black turmeric is, you know, it's like regular turmeric on crack. It's like, you know, the first time people have it, it like almost makes your body vibrate. And it's like, you know, it's called black turmeric instead of blue turmeric. At least this is my understanding, because it was used in worship of the goddess Kali. So they called it Kali Holi, so black turmeric, but it wasn't actually black turmeric. It was Kali's turmeric.
Oh, interesting. I had thought, because I believe I could very well be wrong about this, but I think I remember when I was in Vietnam last year and saw quite a few farmers growing blue turmeric or black turmeric, that the word in Vietnamese is also black turmeric, even though the at least the inside of the rhizome itself is blue. I thought it had to do with the skin, whereas, you know, where sort of regular orange turmeric has kind of a brown or tan colored skin, the skin on blue turmeric or black turmeric is a much darker brown, almost black color.
No, I'm pretty sure. I mean, from my research, I mean, it's like they talk about it in the Vedas. The interesting thing is now they have ceremonial black turmeric for ceremonies and for pujas in India. But what typically is done is that they actually take regular turmeric root and they dye it black, which is so crazy to me. But yeah, I had a piece before we started, because it's like it kind of spontaneously makes me feel calmer and more alert. And I don't fully understand the magic of it, but I truly believe that it's magic. And I actually have acquired the taste for it. And I carry around, as you know, I carry around chips in my purse. So when we had that first conversation about it, I think I pulled it out of my purse for you guys to try.
Yeah. And it is a little bit of an acquired taste. It tastes pretty different from the standard species of turmeric. How would you describe the flavor?
So I know you said that the one that you guys had gotten was a little different. Mine is a little bit like a cross of menthol and camphor, which sounds terrible, but it's actually very like refreshing, and I do think it kind of like freshens your breath. And the most amazing thing about it is that it cuts nausea like I've never seen anything do. And you know, this is a big long thing, but you know, my dad before he passed dealt with cancer for 23 years, and I know that like what your digestive system goes through after, you know, rounds and rounds of chemo is absolutely insane. And I think his journey is a big part of why my whole family is so like, you know, obsessed with health and wellness and, you know, doing it the natural way. But, you know, I really wish I had had this for him then. But whenever a customer or a friend tells me that someone in their family is going through chemo, I always send them some of the black turmeric, because if that person goes through nausea, it's actually one of the ways that I've seen people be able to get food down. So it cuts the nausea long enough that they can actually get a meal in. And it's crazy. It's like, it's really frustrating that you can't really tell that story. I mean, in places like this, yes, but I can't like put it out on the market and tell people that. But you know, the other thing is that it's an endangered species. So the reason that my farmer grows it year after year after year, when nobody buys it except like, you know, someone like me who's just super curious and buys a pound of it, he just really grows it so that it doesn't go extinct, because there's so few people growing it. But I've been obsessed with trying to formulate something, and I'm there. So the next step is figuring out how to get that made.
Yeah.
Because it's an intense flavor, and you can't just, I don't think you can just give the powder or the chips to people, at least commercially speaking. I think it needs to be, you know, made more accessible.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that flavor to, that sort of bitterness, which I have to admit, the first time I tasted it was pretty overwhelming. It's very bitter, but it's not necessarily a bad bitterness, right? It's bitter like broccoli rabe or like an amaro or those sort of refreshing bitter flavors. And it does really have this almost like a cooling effect on your tongue, your mouth. You feel it feels cooler somehow.
Right. It's almost like a natural mint in
yes,
that sense.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I think it does have a little bit of a menthol aroma or flavor. Like imagine mint turned up to 100 and bitter and intense, but also kind of refreshing. It's such an interesting ingredient. And that color, right? Ah. When the fresh roots, they're blue, and they'll be anywhere from a very pale sort of a baby blue all the way down to an indigo. I mean, just an incredible range of blue colors that you wouldn't think appear in nature, but there they are.
Yeah, and if you've seen a whole hand of it, it's an interesting way to like understand how the rhizome grows. So like when you get into the fingers, at least this is what I've seen from my farmer, the fingers tend to be a lighter color, at least it might depend on when they're harvested. And then as you get into the hand, or I don't know what you call it, like the main source of the rhizome, it gets darker and darker in color.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. Because there are sort of two parts of the turmeric root system, the rhizomes, the fingers, and then the bigger pieces that are the hand. But then there's also the heart.
Right.
And I'm trying to remember when we were in Vietnam visiting farms that were growing it, I feel like there were sort of brighter, more vibrant colors in the fingers or in the rhizomes rather than in the heart. And the heart in general tends to be a lighter color across different varieties of turmeric. It's a little spongier. It's where, I guess, the water gets absorbed.
And then there's all of those things in the heart. I don't even know what the term is, but like in potatoes, those little dots.
The eyes?
The eyes, yeah. So the heart of the turmeric is covered in tons of those. So when I had to do the dehydrating myself, I actually got a bunch of those hearts, and I didn't really know. I had never seen them. But then I was like meticulously, I'm a recovering perfectionist, and I literally went through the knife and a paring knife and cut out every little one without wasting any turmeric.
a true labor of love, cutting the eyes out of the heart of your turmeric.
Oh my God, the things I did.
And then one more turmeric question, and then we can talk about other things. But I realize, you know, we haven't really talked about this on the podcast, and there's a lot to cover. There is a combination of turmeric and black pepper that's really important, right?
Yes. I realize right now, I don't know if piperine is the right pronunciation. I've heard piperine and I've heard piperine.
Whatever you want to call it.
Well, that part of the black pepper, and I should know the proper term, but I'm sleep deprived. It basically that part of it helps boost the bioavailability of the turmeric. And I read the number is 2,000%. So whatever you would get from the turmeric on its own, you get 2,000 times more because of the piperine and black pepper. And what's interesting, though, is that you don't actually have to have it with the turmeric. You just have to have it in your bloodstream when you have the turmeric. So like my elixir has a little bit of black pepper in it. I call it like my insurance policy black pepper. And sometimes people add more, you know, sometimes people like to add cayenne. But if you, for instance, had, you know, a sandwich with black pepper in it, it's in your bloodstream already, so you don't necessarily have to have it with the turmeric. And I think that's something that people don't often know. They think they have to have it with it. The other thing that people don't talk about as much is that quercetin also helps the absorption. So that's the reason I have the lemon peel in my blend, because that quercetin also allows you to activate it faster and then not to totally go off track from your question. But the reason I have the maple in my blend is because, and this is my understanding from what I've learned in Ayurveda and other things, that little bit of sugar, the bad thing about sugar is that it goes immediately into your cells. But when that's awesome is when it's also transporting medicinal things into your cells. So my experience is I have an unsweetened version, but I feel the sweetened one more. I feel it faster. So if you have a hangover or a headache or an upset stomach or sore muscles from a workout and you drink a cup of my sweetened elixir, you actually feel the benefit of it faster.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So all of these things like work together. So it's not just about the black pepper, but yeah, black pepper is a good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to do sort of a short episode today and do our rapid fire segment before we wrap up. You ready?
Yep.
All right. What is your desert island kitchen tool? What do you bring with you?
Oh, this is super boring, but I think I would go with a spoon.
A spoon. I love it. Nobody's ever said a spoon before. It's always a knife or something lame like that. Why a spoon?
I use an excessive number of spoons in my life. And you know, I'm hoping that there's passion fruits on this island, but there's other things, and I'll need to scoop the flesh out. And
do you have a particular size or shape? Like, what's your favorite spoon look like?
A teaspoon.
Okay. That feels on brand. Yep.
Yeah. I hate tablespoons. Actually, like, I really don't like the big spoons. If someone serves me food and I have to use them, I kind of don't enjoy my meal as much.
That's funny. I like the biggest spoon possible. If I'm going to be eating with a spoon, I want it to be efficient. I want a shovel, you know? How about what did you eat for breakfast or lunch as a kid? What was a sort of a common meal at home growing up?
Oh, so my mom made all kinds of things. I will say that there was a fair amount of wheat involved. The most common thing was probably dalia, which is, God, is it in England? I think is it Bulgar wheat or cracked wheat?
Yeah, it could be. I'm not sure.
But basically it was like, instead of oatmeal, you take this dalia and you cook it in water, and then you add a little sugar, you add a little milk, you add a little cardamom, and you add a little bit of saffron if you're getting fancy. And it's just like, you know, hot and soothing. And I probably didn't appreciate it enough. We also, you know, as we all got like a little more health conscious, and I guess as tofu became more popular, my mom made tofu bourgi. So bourgi is like scramble. So a lot of people do like an egg bourgi. She does like an amazing flavorful thing with like, you know, onion and tomato and cilantro and cumin and pepper and turmeric and just all kinds of goodness. And a bowl full of that is still one of my favorite breakfasts. Oh, and cashews, a little diced cashew on top.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Wow. Yeah. What's it called? How do you spell it?
Bourgi, probably B-U-R-J-I, but you know, like if you look on the internet, people call it like tofu scramble.
Yeah. Well,
but I should make a recipe and post it because it's yummy.
Yeah. Maybe we could do one with the new chai masala.
Well, the dalia I was thinking actually, I was just thinking like the cardamom and saffron would lend itself well from the chai masala.
Yeah, I told you I made sautéed green beans with it last week, and it came out great. The sort of the spiciness and sweetness from the masala and the sweetness from the really simply sautéed green beans worked.
That's awesome. I like that. It's like it probably brings out the sweetness in the green beans more. I've tried it with squashes, but I haven't tried it with green beans. It's probably really good with carrots as well.
Yeah, I bet it is.
A zucchini. Would be nice.
Well, Anjali, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Where can our listeners find your products, order all of their elixirs, and follow you on social media?
Yeah. So, as you can tell, I have a little bit of a brand shift going on. So my website is bijabar.com, which is bijabhar.com. My Instagram is @drinkresilience. And so you can get my products at bijabar.com. You can also get the chai masala at burlapandbarrel.com. And then for better or worse. I do have it on Amazon just because I know it's convenient for people, so they can also get the turmeric elixir there.
Thanks to Amanda, our amazing sound engineer. Thanks to the Red Crickets for our theme song, which is called Blind. You can reach me via my spice company, Burlap and Barrel, at Burlap and Barrel on Instagram. You can reach Valerie via her Instagram, at Foodie in New York. As always, you can email us, whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org, or find us on social media, at whyfoodpodcast. And most of all, thank you, Anjali. Thanks for joining me and for such an enlightening conversation about turmeric and everything you're working on.
Thank you for inviting me. That was so much fun.
All right. Talk to you all next week.
Why Food is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage.